Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400 or streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people have to say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, then you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. That's 639-0008. Or if you're outside of the county, that's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is give people what they want. My first guest is known as the godfather of consumer insights. He finds new ways of analyzing large swaths of the American economy by supplying a model of aesthetics. His explanation is not so much in the field of economics as it is in the field of psychology, as it's applied to retail environments, and its implications are that businesses must not only provide a product, but they must supply a mood and an atmosphere. If you're a consumer, have you noticed how the world has changed to accommodate you? If you're a woman, what is there left to change? If you want to call, you can call us at 639-0008. Paco Underhill has spent more than 25 years conducting research on different aspects of shopping behavior. He earned his status as a leading expert and a pioneer in this field. Mr. Underhill helps companies understand what motivates the behaviors of today's consumer. His research shows how today's retail world is ruled by such factors as gender, trial and touch, and the human anatomy. Paco Underhill is a regular contributor to all sorts of publications, NPR, BBC Radio. He has columns in the New York Times, London Times, Wall Street Journal. The list goes on and on. His latest book is titled, What Women Want, The Global Market Turns Female Friendly. Welcome to the show, Paco Underhill. How are you today?
Wow, thank you, Billy. Well, I'm staggering along, and it's only Tuesday.
It's only Tuesday. Well, the week can only get better from here now that you've been on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
So, well, are they calling you the brainiac, the maniac here?
No, not the brainiac, the maniac. I'm writing that down, though. This is like professional consulting advice. I appreciate that. You probably charge tens of thousands of dollars for those kinds of suggestions.
You can brand yourself any way you choose to.
Thank you. Thanks. I loved your book, What Women Want. I really enjoyed it. I like your perspective. By the way, I own all of your books. You got me with The Call of the Mall. The title just by itself was great. But in this book, What Women Want, one of your major themes is control is a fundamental requirement in the female's buying pattern. That's what they're looking for. What do you mean by control? Why is control so important to a woman when she's shopping?
Well, historically, women have been the purchasing agent for the family. The woman got to escape the home, got to escape her kids and her husband, and go off to the market and spend the family's weekly expenditure. She still controls much of that weekly expenditure, but increasingly, she's the primary bread earner in the family, particularly in the lee of these economic troubles. So women are asking for a better sense of acknowledgement that they aren't just buying the milk, eggs, butter, and T-shirts here. They're also buying the lawn mowers, the homes, and the cars as well.
Okay. I get it. Now, you mentioned something only in passing, which is probably worth developing a little bit more, and that is the role that the woman plays in the whole economic cycle of the family. I mean, not only do they control the active income of the salaries and that both she and her husband bring in, but they also now are controlling more and more of the passive income from investments and annuities and things like that, as well as they control the entire social aspect of their family's life. They're in complete control there. They make major decisions on, of course, household appliances and anything that has to do with the home. But they are influencers in things such as car purchases, even tire purchases, things like that that you normally think are the purview of the man have now sort of switched over to being the woman. What has been the you've observed this over time, what has been the shift and why has this shifted more and more towards women's world than a man's world?
Well, it's just a matter of economic power. I think we passed over a very magic moment, a few years ago, where if you were an employed 30-year-old woman in a major American city, you were out-earning your male counterpart by as much as 20%. You were better educated, you had a better job, and while there certainly is a glass ceiling up there, the number of families, as I stated earlier, where the woman is the primary breadwinner are increasing with each passing year. And if she's making it, shouldn't she also decide where it's being spent?
That makes perfect sense. Now, in your book, because of the power that women have, one of the major theses that you have is women are concerned about cleanliness and hygiene more so than men. I would say men are concerned about it too, but maybe not to the degree that women are. What do retailers have to learn about cleanliness to better serve the female market?
Well, first of all, women's radar for clean is eminently more tuned than men are. If we walk into a hotel room, we aren't checking to see if there are 364 other people that have lived in that room before we did. Whereas a woman walks into a hotel room, and if she finds some evidence of a previous occupant, that's gross. We also know that when you and I walk into a store, we aren't looking to see if there's residual cheese doodle from 2006 that's still rubbed into the carpet in the dressing room. But believe me, your wife sees it, and it matters to her.
Absolutely it does. And you mentioned an interesting example, that of the hotel room. And until I read your book, being a male, I didn't think about, in a hotel room, their object is to turn over that room and have an occupant in it 365 days a year. That's their goal. And yet, I didn't think about it until I read your book. And then other things popped up and became meaningful to me as well. Things as simple as the shower curtain rod. Now, how does a shower curtain rod really lend itself to being more female-friendly?
Well, a female is much more conscious of the fact that if 364 people have been in that shower before she has over the past year, that she doesn't want to touch the inside of the shower curtain.
And their germs and...
It's dirty.
Yeah, exactly.
It's dirty. A lot of other people have been there before she has. And she's smart enough to have realized that while somebody may have wiped down the outside of the shower curtain, they probably haven't wiped down the inside.
Good point. And so the curved shower curtain helps in what way?
It is one of those things where women have talked about how creepy they feel the tub and the bath are, and the hotel industry has picked up on it, and in virtually every hotel room that I am in, and I spend a lot of nights on the road, there's a curved shower curtain, whether I'm staying at a Comfort Inn or the Ritz-Carlton.
And that just helps to keep the curtain away from the female
body
bather.
As she bathes, yes.
Okay, great. Well, on the subject of hotels and hospitality, too, men, when we check into a hotel, we've got a ritual, and we used to have the ritual back in the 70s and the 80s where, you know, we'd get the key and the person behind the desk would shout out the room number, take the elevator up to such and such a floor, and there you are. But with females doing more and more of the business travel and certainly all of the vacation travel, you know, what is hotel security? How does that factor into a female's requirement for choosing a place to stay?
Well, I'm 6'4". I weigh 220 pounds. If somebody announces my name and my room number, if I'm checking in to the O'Hare Marriott, it is no threat to my security. Whereas if you're a female, somebody announcing your name in your room number where three other people in the lobby get to hear it might be considered a security risk. So part of the protocol in virtually every hotel now is that you get handed your key, and the key number is written on a piece of paper that's folded over, The fold is open to you in a way where you are the only person who can see the number. In many hotels, people will step out from behind the counter and, you know, usher you to the elevator back.
We're talking to Paco Underhill, everybody. He's known as the godfather of consumer insights. Love his books. His latest book is What Women Want. In some of your earlier books, Paco, you talk about the differences between the way men and women shop. And I love the way you describe how men approach shopping. Our approach is to find it, kill it, drag it out. How is that fundamentally different from women's shopping styles?
Well, you and your wife could meet at the local shopping mall, spend the entire afternoon, buy nothing, and have a fabulous time. In part because they're programmed to be gatherers, meaning that they get pleasure out of the act of looking, whereas you and I don't get pleasure unless we kill it and bring something home.
That's exactly true. I mean, that's the way I feel. For me, shopping is just a means to an end. I need something. I go in. I have an idea of what I want. I may have researched it on the internet, as more and more women are researching on the internet as well. However, I get the satisfaction out of buying it and really leaving the store. That's where I get the thrill. For
how
women,
old
it's
are
different.
You?
How old am I? I'm 52.
Well, you and I are close in age. Don't you think that your son or your grandson shops a little differently than you do?
My son, no. My grandson is too young yet to have. He still needs his mom to take him to the store. So,
part of what we know is that if you're a 12-year-old boy in today's culture, you get a lot more pleasure out of hanging out at the mall than you and I ever did.
Interesting point. I'd like to expand on that and some of the other points that you've got in your book, What Women Want. We're going to have to do that after we come back after this short break. Stay tuned, everybody.
And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday, here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. If you would like to call in and talk to my guest, who is the godfather of consumer insights, give us a call at 639-0008, 639-0008. Paco Underhill is the author of the book, What Women Want. We've been talking about his observations of over 25 years of looking at the retailing landscape and what he has observed and how the trends are changing. And one of the most interesting observations in your entire book is the observations as it relates to the restrooms. So one of the tactics when you go into any retailer, you immediately make a beeline for the restroom, and not the men's room. You go into the women's room. Why do you do that?
It's a good way of finding out whether somebody's paying attention. The origins of this book were maybe 6 years ago. I was doing a job for a major car company, and we would run hit and run inspections of dealerships where we'd come in unannounced and just take a look. And one of the places that I would take this group of senior executive, which incidentally were all male, is that we'd walk into the ladies' bathroom at the dealership, and I would turn to them and go, "Do you think your wife would like to do her business here?"
Mm.
And the answer was almost universally no. And my point being, with half the cars on the road driven by females, with the computerization of the engine, where part of the choice in terms of the car isn't just the choice of the car, it's the choice of the dealership where they will have to come drop their car off at least twice a year to have it serviced, that the niceties of the dealership may define who gets the business and who doesn't.
Very good observation and very insightful as well. A lot of companies get the idea of the restroom and the amenities and so forth, but there are others that might not. And I like to do something we call the quick fire, where I just give you some types of companies and you give me your top of mind reaction to whether they get it, whether they understand about the amenities, whether they understand what women want in their business. You've already talked about car dealers, so I'm going to turn my attention to airlines. Do they get it?
Filthiest place that an American experiences is the restroom in the economy section of a airplane. I think it's time that Boeing, you know, separated men and women and reorganized how we relieved ourselves up in the air.
Interesting. Now, just expand on that a little bit further. So you'd have separate men's and women's, which I can completely understand.
I think we should have separate men's and ladies' rooms, and I might point out that they are in the pipeline at Boeing.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. Maybe the 787, when it finally comes to market, the Dreamliner will have that for us. I look forward to that.
Or certainly having a restroom that has some self-cleaning device to it, which you find in some European restrooms where, you know, it gets regularly sanitized by, you know, steam every 15 minutes. But no, the filthiest place that most Americans experience is the restroom on a crowded flight from L.A. to New York.
Interesting. Well, let me give you another thought then. This is a part of our quickfire. Movie theaters.
One of the key issues about a movie theater is that it is a place where everything that happens in it and where everybody is at any given moment in time is absolutely and completely predictable. I know who is walking out of this corridor at this particular moment in time. One of the things we've been working on is how do we better use the theater as a way of communicating what your next movie choice should be. Also, that the clearest parallel to a modern cineplex is an airport where everyone has time, food, and bathroom anxieties.
Interesting. Time, food, and bathroom anxieties. That's exactly right. When I travel, those are the three things that I'm concerned about. That and getting on the flight in time. Very interesting. Now, another part of the quick fire, something that you were talking about earlier, and that is women enjoy going to the malls. Now, young teenagers enjoy going to the malls and just hanging out. So I'm going to ask you, top of mind thought for shopping malls and shopping mall restrooms.
Well, shopping malls moving into the future, I think all developers across the world are conceiving not of malls, but of alls, meaning that our modern American shopping mall has to be a complete solution, meaning that it should probably have a supermarket that's attached to it, probably should have a drugstore. It should be a place where we can accomplish a broader cross-section of missions. And if we talk about the bathroom in a shopping mall, maybe we view it not as a necessity, but as a marketing opportunity where I get people to sample products.
Give me a for instance. What sort of product would I sample there?
Well, you could sample the latest Origins hand soap, or you could hand out samples of other health and beauty aids, knowing that you know who's coming into that mall restroom when. That the audience at Monday morning at 11 a.m. is different from the audience on Thursday night at 8:30 in the evening.
Very good, very good. Let me, in your book, you talk about tool belt divas, which I think is neat. It's that changing trend where women are getting more involved in home improvement themselves. There's whole lines of tools that are geared towards women and so forth. So home improvement stores, I think of Home Depot, I think of Lowe's. Do they get it? Do they understand catering to the female audience?
I think they are getting it in the sense that there are many more women working in it, and that there are many more women who are persuading other women to take on more and more complex projects. So it isn't just, you know, retiling the bathroom. It might be actually taking down a wall.
Gotcha. All right. One last in our quick fire, and then we'll leave that, and that is gas stations. Do gas stations understand the modern consumer?
Well, with half the cars driven on the road being driven by females, that we know that the female driver approaches a gas station, and certainly she is processing the price of regular, but she's also processing cleanliness and security. And that therefore being light and bright and being covered is a very important part of generating female loyalty at the gas station.
Got it. Got it. All right, let's shift gears a little bit because I want to talk about one of the companies that you have very successfully consulted with, and it's my wife's favorite store, and that is Target. What has Target done right when it comes to catering to the woman shopper?
Well, I think, first of all, If you visit Target headquarters, it's in downtown Minneapolis, mm-hmm. which means that unlike many American corporate campuses, which are in the suburbs, there's a palpable sense of being exposed to urbanness. And I think that sense of hipness is something that has gone from the corporate headquarters onto the floor of the store itself. Target takes some pleasure in being a merchant and recognizes that if it can provide you a well-designed, inexpensive solution, that we'll probably take it.
That is great. And certainly Target stores are among, like I said, my wife's favorite stores. Enjoy going in there myself with her when we do that. I'm going to change gears on you completely here, because in your book, you make some interesting allegations. And one of them is you describe the legendary architect Frank Lloyd Wright as a villain, and that he and Henry Ford are just to be demonized. Why?
I think one is Frank Lloyd Wright romanticized the suburbs as some place where the man gets to leave his little woman at home with the children while he goes off to work. Henry Ford made it possible, and part of what we got is a suburban landscape that is often devoid of character. It is one that was often debilitatingly isolated for the female left at home with her children. It demanded that any place that she went to, she had to drive or organized a way of getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And that the kids were isolated in communities that were developed with houses that all cost the same, so that their sense of class was very limited. They didn't get to experience a cross-section of people. Whereas if you live in a city or you live in a village, you realize that there are a variety of different life stages. I think there's no irony that one of the trends in modern America is new urbanism, where we have redesigned what the nature of a suburb is to be able to make it, first, walkable. Second is a community where within a very concentrated area, I can go from starter home to bigger home to granny apartment if I need to.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, as an offshoot of suburbanization, the whole focus of the home sort of changed when that happened as well. People's single biggest asset was their home, and homes have changed over time to meet women's needs more and more. What are some of the major changes that you've seen in home building that take women's needs into account?
Well, probably first is the role of the kitchen. It used to be, stuck at the back of the house, whereas the kitchen now in most American families is the center of the family home, both in reality and emotionally. I think of even in my own home that I have a very nice living room, very nice dining room, but everything that happens in my house happens in the kitchen.
Exactly. I would agree with that completely. But even the kitchen itself has sort of changed, even within the confines of the four walls of the kitchen. How has that changed over
time? Well, some of it is the seminal appliance in the modern American home is the refrigerator, as opposed to the stove. There are, 10 times the variety of fingerprints on the refrigerator as they are on the stove. The number of people who interact with it is different.
I think that is probably one of the most interesting facts in your book, is how the refrigerator overtook the stove. In our household, of course, the children go in and out of the refrigerator, the grandchildren go in and out of the refrigerator, yet Wolf and some of these other large stove and range manufacturers are doing great guns as well. How do you explain the dichotomy there?
Well, some of it is with women earning much more money and controlling much more of the family budget, that if the guy goes out and gets a male menopause toy like a motorcycle, that maybe she says, I want a toy in my kitchen too. If you walk into the Williams-Sonoma store in the Time Warner Center here in New York City,
mm-hmm.
there are a pair of $30,000 stoves right at the entrance.
Wow.
And those stoves I are more than Buckingham Palace needs here.
That is true, but they are status symbols too, aren't they?
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. I can't believe how quickly the time has gone. We've been talking to Paco Underhill, everybody. His latest book is What Women Want. He is truly the guru when it comes to consumer insight in the United States. He has been tracking this for over 25 years. I learned so much from reading your book. Thank you, Paco, for being our guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.